Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'm for my friends. I'm just trying to help you make some money. My job, not just entertainment, to educate, teach. Call me 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. It's time to speak the truth about the Fed and its minions. Far too often, people play what it's become actually an absurd parlor game of parsing every word out of every Fed official's mouth. Anytime someone mentions a rate cut, it's, oh, how many, when, where? You've heard it endlessly. But on a good day, Dow jumped 307 points, S&P gained 1.11%, NASDAQ pole vaulted 1.24%. I need you to understand that you don't need to take these comments so seriously. When Fed officials blather all the time, making projections, pontificating, each new speech is treated as gospel. I can't take it anymore. Most of the time, these comments are full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. They just aren't that consequential, but we sure don't treat them that way. Within the last week, I've heard that we might have two cuts, three cuts, one cut, maybe no cuts. There's no consistency from these people and no consensus. Fortunately, there's one member of the Federal Market Committee who takes a common sense approach to waiting to see how things play out before making any big decisions. And it's the guy running the show, Fed Chief Jay Powell. Would it hurt us to just emphasize him and stop the maybe two, maybe three card Monty drivel? Because these other officials won't keep their trap shut, we get this guessing game where everyone tries to figure out what the Fed's going to do, even though their comments really don't give us much insight at all. But here's what you need to know. Investing is not, I repeat, not a game. You simply can't afford to take your cue from this nonsense. Why? First, because Powell is all that matters. But second, when it comes to stocks, as long as the rate cuts are in front of us, they can rally. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter how many cuts. What matters is the Fed wants to be our friend. That's the takeaway. At this point, nobody knows how many rate cuts we're going to get. That's ridiculous. And that includes Fed Chief Jay Powell. Although that doesn't seem to stop any of these pop-offs. You need to understand, though, that the period before the first cut is nirvana for the stock market. This is the ideal moment where the economy's chugging along just fine.
All aboard!
And we know we're going to get some relief from the Fed eventually. But by the time they actually start cutting rates, the economy will have slowed down, and that's not good for your portfolio. This is the sweet spot, people. Somehow people seem to think that the market can't go higher without rate cuts. That is just patently false. I go so far as to say that the whole dialogue about these Fed officials is just dead wrong. The parlor game of guessing when or how many is pointless. What matters is whether they even need to cut rates at all. Case in point, this morning we got a robust employment report with some fairly decent wage inflation numbers. If you heard from a Fed governor this morning, oh, I'm sure what they would have said. I know what they said. They said, oh, maybe one cut, maybe two cut, maybe no cut. And that's all anybody would focus on. But after such an encouraging labor report, the narrative should have been something like this. Oh, good. Good for stocks. The economy's still humming. We're going into earnings season with a strong consumer. There's no need for the Fed to do anything for the moment, but this business is pretty darn good. If we weren't more focused on these positives, people could have gotten a jump on today's terrific rally.
That was easy.
Yesterday, people blamed the sell-off on a Fed official who questioned the need for rate cuts, but that's not really what happened at all. If you simply looked at the timestamps of when that sell-off began, you'd see that it was totally in conjunction with the spike in oil prices, no doubt related to the latest scare in the Middle East. Yep, it was crude, the war premium, not the Fed speak that was almost universally credited or blamed for the action. False narrative alert! So going forward, I'm begging you to tune out this blather. It's hurting our ability to make money in the market. At best, it's a distraction. At worst, it's a misdirection play, and it won't go on here in Mad Money. Either way, just ignore it. With that in mind, let's go over the game plan of what we've got, okay? Specifically avoiding the seven Fed speakers, including two who speak twice, because you know what? They'll just send you in the wrong direction. Now, on Monday, we have the, I would call it the worst possible day for the solar stocks. It's a total eclipse of the sun. We're going to hear a lot about the drawbacks of solar power. Believe it or not, we actually will, namely that it only works when the sun's out. Hey, it's only wind only works when it's windy. Personally, though, I prefer an alternative. I prefer energy focused on wind, not solar. And that gives me brings me to GE Vernova with its gigantic service revenue stream based on windmills. If you want renewable energy, you got my blessing to leg into that one. Just spun off this week from General Electric. Earlier this week, I told you about a group of stocks that I've ignored for years, and that is the cannabis stocks. I thought they're a waste of our time. But now that the Florida Supreme Court this week allowed cannabis on the ballot in November, it looks like we're going to take another major state coming out for recreational weed, assuming 60% of the people vote yes. If you want to bet on this, I'd go with Canopy Growth, CGC. That's almost a subsidiary of Constellation Brands. We'll talk about that in a second. Many traders prefer Tilray, though. I'm going to go back to a well that I have not visited in years, and I'm going to listen to Tilray Conference. I want to hear what they have to say about this Florida vote. Wednesday here, this is a number that we're going to hear about, and it's worth listening to. It's Consumer Price Index. This matters because if the CPI is too hot, there's a possibility that long-term interest rates will go higher, which is actually important. I'll be focused extra special on rent because we've still got a massive housing shortage in this country, and that's without even factoring in the impact of immigration, legal and illegal. We also get results from the airlines with the best set of financials, and that happens to be, at this point, Delta. I normally don't countenance buying stocks right before the quarter, especially the airlines, but with the travel boom very much alive, bolstered by this morning's rosy employment numbers, I think you actually give this one a try. Thursday, most important day when it comes to earnings for the Travel Trust, and that's because Constellation Brands reports. Yes, they sell, you know that this is the number one beer in the U.S. by revenue, which is Modelo. They make it, should have an excellent quarter, give us a good outlook. We know beer sales have been strong. The cash flow is bountiful, but Constellation still has to pay down more debt before shareholders can benefit much from it. You never want to be selling the stock so close to taking a mile, though. Friday, the real earnings season does begin, and it is the parade that everybody talks about. Yeah, it's Wells Fargo, Chapel Trust, named J.P. Morgan, BlackRock, Citigroup, all reporting all at once. These financials are classic examples of what I'm talking about when I say it won't necessarily be good for the market when the Fed finally starts cutting rates. Why? Because you don't want an aggressive slashing of rates if you're a bank. Something like Wells Fargo, which we own for the Chapel Trust, does well in a situation where rates stay higher for longer. The others aren't that different. Bottom line, if you only take one thing away from this screed I just gave you, it should be that you need to stop the fixating on the words of Fed officials. Stop worrying about how many rate cuts we're going to get and when or where or why or how. If you can't free yourself from this terrible parlor game, you're going to miss a ton of terrific investments. I'm going to start the questioning with Marcia in Washington. Marcia.
Hi, Jim. It's good to get to talk to you today.
Say, Marcia, what's happening?
Well, I'm a new member of the Investing Club, and I'm looking at buying some Best Buy. But I'm wondering if I should be concerned about recent insider selling.
Okay, Best Buy, first of all, thank you for being a member of the club. I like Best Buy because I believe we're going to see a radical refresh of PCs come this fall. And it, well, actually, it's going to start in July. And people aren't, they're not focusing on this. They're making a big mistake. The PC refresh cycle is going to drive Best Buy higher. Meantime, you'll be protected by the yield. I am urging people to get long Best Buy. Particularly club members know how much I like the stock. I'm trying to buy it and get bigger if it goes down. Brian in Connecticut. Brian.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks for the great work you do with your charitable trust.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I'm proud that I've given away more than $4 million. Thank you very much.
Thanks for giving back. Hey, Jim, my question is about AT&T. I inherited some AT&T back in 2016, cost basis original shares about $43 a share. It is tanked, and even with the reverse Morris Trust of Warner Brothers, it's still bad. What do you think about the management, the company, and the stock?
My Nana Mary always said, if you've done everything good to say, don't say it. So let's go to, that's it for the calls. I want you to stop fixating so much on the words of Fed officials, people. Stop worrying about rate cuts or when or where or why. That's a terrible game, and it's going to cause you to miss a lot of terrific investments. Oh, man, money tonight. Oil spiked yesterday, causing a sell-off, the likes of which we haven't seen since last year. So I'm going to go to my favorite guy, Rusty Brazil, to find out what the heck is going on with the price of oil, get a sense of where the market's headed. Then we're continuing our series on successful small caps by covering the healthcare space. I'll share you some names I'm watching as we put together a basket of great smaller caps. And this week was a humbling reminder that keeping a diversified portfolio can help you withstand some volatility. So tonight we're playing MI Diversified to see if your portfolios can pass the muster of Cramerica. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Fact: running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact: smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
Everybody's watching this relentless run in oil, up more than 20% year-to-date, because it's a major component of inflation, and we all want it cheaper, especially at the pump. But between OPEC and friends hold the production cuts in place, let's call it elevated tensions in the Middle East, the price of crude, it just can't seem to find a top. Plus, I'm a little facetious, but we got to deal with this. We have a total solar eclipse on Monday, worst day of the year for the solar power companies. Yes, we do want to rely on renewables, but you need reliable sources of energy, and I don't know whether the solar can really deliver for us. So in this crazy moment for the industry, I want to check in with the smartest energy analyst in the game, Rusty Brazil, the founder and executive chairman of RBN Energy. Rusty, great to have you back on Mad Money.
Oh, good to see you again, Jim.
Okay, so Rusty, I do want to talk about the solar eclipse because you did a great piece at RBN about it. But let's deal with the reality of what has happened here. You and I both know we have a lot of oil in the Permian. We don't necessarily have a red-hot economy. We seem to have suddenly, though, gotten very, very tight in oil. A lot of people talking about 100, a lot of people talking about 100 plus. Will you please tell me what's going on and when this can stop?
Yeah, well, you know, what's going on, Jim, is we're back into a war premium again. So we've got at least a $5 war premium in the market because of what's going on in the Middle East. Then OPEC has done, you know, for them, a good job in extending their cuts out, at least right now until June. And you've got in Ukraine, you've got drone attacks from Ukraine on Russia refineries. That's tightened things up. And then here in the U.S., although the Permian's doing okay, frankly, production has not really increased in the last 6 months. So you put all that together, and we're right here on the verge of the summer driving season when we're going to start using a lot of gasoline. Prices are up to, crude oil prices in the U.S. are up to $87, and they're probably going higher.
But, Rusty, if I were OPEC Plus, I would say, listen, we got to get it back down, or the U.S. is going to start drilling all over the country.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got this thing called capital discipline now, Jim, and so when crude oil prices increase, it's no longer drill, baby, drill like it used to be. We're going to increase drilling by some, but we're also going to be basically taking the cash that we're making from the higher prices and paying it back in one way or the other to our shareholders. And that's the way it's worked for the last 3 years, and that's the way it's going to work this time around, too.
Why are people in Wall Street playing it by owning every single refiner there is?
Say that one more time.
The refiners, they're the ones that are really going nuts. Why are they making
so much money?
They're
doing great. Yep. Yep. Refiners are doing well. Margins are good. Margins on gasoline are better than they've been for a while, and therefore we're going to be doing just fine in terms of refinery profitability over the next couple of quarters.
Well, then I see why everyone's buying the Valeros and the Marathons, but also the Exxons and the Chevrons. Now, on Monday, we do get a total eclipse of the sun. And the reason I do want to talk about this is because there are a lot of people who feel we're going to get 25% of our energy by 2030 by solar, 25% by wind. Events like Monday make me feel like that could be a pipe dream. What do you think?
Well, we're going to have a lot more wind and solar than we've got right now. But the example of what's going to happen on Monday, I think, is one thing that we really have to consider in terms of how big a deal this is ultimately going to be. Because on Monday, we're going to have it's going to hit mostly here in Texas, where I live. And the solar is probably going to get cut by 90%. But it's only about 10% of the whole total generation mix in ERCOT, the area, the operations that operations group that handles most of Texas. And the big scheme of life, all they're going to do is just crank up gas-fired power generation in order to make up the difference. And that's the problem. Like we've always talked about before, sometimes the sun doesn't shine, sometimes the wind doesn't blow. And whenever that happens, until battery technology can take care of it, and so forth it can't, then the backup fuel is natural gas. And that is just simply going to become more and more of a problem as wind and solar become a larger percentage of the generation mix.
Fair enough. Now, how about the action between the White House and the oil companies? First, in that it looks like they didn't refill the SPR when they had a chance, so there's not enough oil to dump and get gasoline down. And then secondly, this decision to be able to look a pause with LNG. That turned out to have bigger implications than they seemed to realize, didn't it?
Absolutely. It's such a shame, Jim, because although the pause that they kicked in, it's not going to affect what's going on in the market right now, and it's not even going to affect what's going to happen with the various terminals that have already achieved their approvals. But for any project that was currently under development that was trying to get approvals and trying to get folks to sign up for that capacity, that pause just threw cold water on the whole thing. Put yourself in the position of a buyer of LNG. You absolutely, positively have to have certainty of supply. And now what you just heard is that I can put out a press release and the administration can put out a press release, and all of a sudden I don't have that certainty of supply anymore. And that means that as a buyer, I've got to look someplace else. I can't trust the United States to be there when I need them. And that's a shame.
But Rusty, here's what I don't understand. The whole world recognizes we've got to go from being all renewables to being pragmatic about energy. Pragmatic means we have to worry about energy security. But the White House clearly does not think about energy security if they're talking about a pause in 2028.
That is absolutely true. And what would really be a shame, Jim, if it turns out that, as a lot of folks seem to be saying, that this is really kind of a political bargaining chip in the first place, we've sent a really bad signal to the world.
Boy, I don't understand this. All right, so let's go over. We look like the oil could easily go over 100. We don't necessarily have that surety that we might have thought for LNG, even though we got a ton of it. And in the meantime, we have parts of this country where LNG, you can't give it away.
Yep, but Jim, on the $100, it's not going to be there for long. You know, we've been for the last three years, we've been in a $70 to $90 trading range. And I think we're going to stay there. So we may bump up to $100 for a while, but it's not going to stay there very long. The supply-demand equation is going to pull those prices right back down in the same range that we've been for 3 years.
So therefore, the inflation that people are worried about from it is maybe that's an overblown concern.
I think, $90 is higher than $70, so it's non-trivial. But in terms of going to $100 and staying there for 3 years again, that's not going to happen.
All right. Well, look, you leave us with some hope, but obviously we're concerned about many of the other things because it doesn't seem like everybody's rowing together in this country about this. Rusty Brazil, you remain the founder and executive chair of RBN and our leading authority and truth-sayer. on Mad Money. Rusty, it's so glad you're on the show. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Talk to you soon. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, no small stakes in healthcare. So which small cap stocks in this cohort pass the physical? Find out next.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Like I've been saying all week, I think 2024 could only be the year that small cap stocks get their mojo back. There's a crypto went out of style when interest rates soared, and they'll work a lot better as rates come down. Oh, by the way, as has been typical, they drastically underperformed the S&P again in today's rally. That's why I'm going sector by sector to identify my favorite small cap names for when they're ready to move. Last night it was the industrials. Tonight I want to focus on healthcare. That's the second largest group in the Russell 2000. There are 408 healthcare stocks in this, most of which are biotech names, and most of those are bad. When you drill down into the ones in our target market cap range with positive earnings and reasonable valuations, it leaves us with only 48 stocks. Let me give you my top five of the 48. First up is Integer Holdings, which is one I haven't talked about at all before. Integer is a major outsourced manufacturer of medical devices. When Abbott Labs, that's a charitable trust name, or Boston Scientific, or Medtronic designs them, they go to these guys to actually produce the stuff. I think this company benefits from high healthcare utilization rates, as it could take years for people to get all the non-urgent procedures they postponed during the pandemic. Integer makes regular tuck-in acquisitions to keep its technology portfolio fresh. You might think there's nothing special about an outsourced manufacturer, but I beg to disagree. When you're producing, say, pacemakers, that requires real expertise. Not just anyone can get these things rolling off the assembly line. Second small cap healthcare name I like, how about Progyny? This is a unique story that I've been loosely following since the company came public nearly 5 years ago. Had them on the show roughly a year and a half ago. Progyny is a fertility benefits management company. Businesses sign up with them to offer fertility and family building benefits to their employees. Progyny acts as a consultant of sorts for all of its clients, employees, but also they help them pay for expensive fertility treatments. This company's been a truly rapid grower, but the stock doesn't reflect any of that growth. After a big run from the teens in early 2020 to the high 60s in late 2021, Progyny pulled back hard in 2022, and the stock's been stuck mostly in the 30s ever since then. Sideways. Sideways, by the way, is a direction. Of course, some of these, that's because Progyny reported its most recent quarter in late February. They delivered what I call a set of mixed numbers, and that was mostly because of some timing issues and mix shifts. On top of that, the guidance was downright confusing, and that's why the stock sunk 15% in a single day. But I think the business remains good. They're talking about 18 to 21% revenue growth. I like that. That's this year. 10 to 14% earnings growth. That should get them a high multiple. As I see it, the stock's enticing. At the end of the day, we still have a labor shortage in this country, which means employers are willing to bend over backwards to recruit workers. And that means offering people various benefits. And that includes Progyny. For our third small cap healthcare fave, oh, an old favorite of ours, Owens & Minor, which came on our radar screen during the pandemic because they're a major domestic producer of personal protective equipment. Remember PPE? At the time the stock was at $5 and change, the company had a market cap of less than $350 million. By the mid-2021 period, Owens & Minor had climbed as high as $49. But once the pandemic tailwind faded away, the stock pulled back and pulled back hard. It's now come back to the mid-20s, although that's after steadily rebounding over the past 6 months. Unlike many other COVID plays, Owens & Minor put its pandemic-era profits to work by making a pair of acquisitions in the home healthcare space. Thanks to those deals, the company now has what's called a patient direct segment, which has become a big growth driver. Sales up 24% last year. I like that. Meanwhile, the core personal protective equipment business actually declined by 1.5%. I don't like that. Now, Owens & Minor had an investor day event in December, where they rolled out some very bullish long-term targets. For example, they're talking about earnings per share growing at a 20% compound annual rate from last year through 2028. Doesn't hurt that last quarter was strong with a solid outlook. I see Owens & Minor as another winner in the world of higher healthcare utilization, this big theme of ours. Now, while the Russell 2000 includes hundreds of biotechs, I'm not eager to recommend them because the individual biotechs are incredibly hit or miss. In the drug space, I prefer the larger, more mature pharmaceutical companies, or at least later stage biotechs that are close to bringing an actual drug to market. While I believe biotech as a group can thrive through the end of the year, speculating on individual small cap biotech names requires a ton of research. Now, if you just want to bet on the group, go buy the field bets like iShares Biotech ETF or IBB or the S&P Biotech ETF, the XBI. Those will do it for you. That said, there's one I do like, and that's called Catalyst Pharmaceuticals, a biotech firm with three treatments for rare diseases on the market. This company is more of an investor than an inventor. I do prefer the inventors, but listen to this. It buys up promising early stage drugs, then brings them to market rather than developing them from scratch. It's taken me a while to come around on Catalyst. I talked about it in January and didn't love it. But the company just successfully launched its third drug last month, which matters because the previous two drugs go off patent in the not-too-distant future. And the best part, Catalyst stock has done nothing since I told you to ignore it a few months ago. So you haven't missed anything. Finally, I've got one more small-cap healthcare play, and this is another new one. It's called Addus, A-D-D-U-S, Home Care. One of the most investable themes in the industry is moving away from providing care in hospitals and towards other lower cost settings like outpatient treatment centers or even patients' homes. Addus Home Care offers a range of services, including in-home medical care and in-home assistance with day-to-day activities for people who need help. And less upbeat, in-home hospice care, because nobody wants to spend their final moments in a hospital. Right now, Addus gets most of its revenue from Illinois, New Mexico, and New York, but they love to expand into new areas by making acquisitions like a $100 million deal to enter Tennessee last year. When Addus reported in late February, they delivered a strong top and bottom line beat. While the company doesn't give formal guidance, management sounded in an optimistic tone for 2024. The analysts have been falling in love with this one, and I think it's the sweet spot trend-wise. Bottom line, those are my five favorite ideas from the small cap healthcare space with a nice mix of subsectors, don't you think, and some promising narratives. Now you got some new undervalued small cap ideas for both the industrials and the healthcare sectors. Hey, listen, we're not done with this. Tune back in next week as I come through a few more sectors, starting with the financials. There's a ton of them in there on Monday. Because if this turns out to be the year of small cap stocks, well, we need to identify the potential windfalls.
That was easy.
House of pleasure.
Rambo in California. Rambo.
Booyah, Jim. This is Rambo in San Jose. Jim, it was so great to meet you at NVIDIA's GTC event a couple weeks ago.
I like Santana Row, man. I'd toast you if we were there right now.
Jim, I'm going to have to send a bottle of phosphor to Hector for thanking him for setting up that introduction.
Jim, oh, you be the man. And Hector, how much we miss Hector, how great he is. His fellow worship at NVIDIA, who's just the best there is. How can I help you, buddy?
Jim, I'm starting to invest in pharmaceuticals, and there is one company in particular that I'm looking at. This pharmaceutical is trading at a low PE of 13 because of loss of exclusivity on a couple of key drugs that they've got coming up. But the street just is not giving them any credit for some major acquisitions that they're making that are potentially going to help make up for that shortfall. The company has a dividend of almost 5% that they've committed to on your show. And most important, they partner closely with NVIDIA for using generative AI to advance drug discovery. Jim, should I double down on Bristol Myers, BMY?
Okay, here's the problem with Bristol Myers. When you listen to them, they're very abject. They'll tell you, listen, it's not going to come together until 2030. They do say the dividend will be fine, but by 2030, I didn't say that. And my problem with that is most people are going to be impatient. They will not wait that long. If you can wait that long and take that yield in the interim, I agree with you about the whole thing, but there's no patience on Wall Street for that one, even as you and I think there should be. Now, if this turns out to be the year of small cap stocks, well, we got to get a list of potential windfalls, right? Hopefully this one will be pique your interest. Now, we have so much Mad Money, it's just outrageous. Sasella puts investors on alert to make sure you have a portfolio that can handle whatever the market throws you. So we now play our favorite, the game I know you love. We play Am I Diversified to see if your holdings are defensive enough, maybe you need to make some changes. Then one of the top semiconductor analysts on the street came out with a scathing note on Intel today. And this story has been a problematic one for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share what I make of the chip maker with you. And all your calls rapid fire in a special March Madness edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. The markets have been seesawing this entire week, haven't they? Dow's down 1% one day, it's up the next. It's like the old days. Led us to the worst start, though, of any month for Dow. Get this, 13 years. In times like these, a lot of investors can panic and end up making changes to the portfolio they regret later, especially if there's some Fed pop-off who says there's no cuts. I always say no one ever made a dime panicking. You make money by doing your homework and sticking with the good ones, and that's why we're playing Am I Diversified. It's where you call me, you tell me your top five holdings, and tell you if your portfolio's diversified. Maybe you got to mix it up a little. Let's play. Let's go to Chris. Oh, in Kansas. Chris, you're up first caller. What do you got?
Jim, thank you and your staff for having me on. I appreciate all the hard work y'all guys do. Club
thank
member
you.
Here.
Staff, oh, thank you for being a member of the club. We had a lot of club members last night with my wife at my Fosforo event at Dos Caminos. How can I help you?
That's right. Thank you. I would like your opinion on my portfolio. It's able to come back like the Chiefs or fall apart like the Cowboys. Any feedback is appreciated into this market. My top five stocks are Pfizer, Ford, Disney, Schlumberger, and Wells Fargo. Jim, am I diversified?
All right, let me go to work. Now, first of all, I am there's for a moment there, I was just going to bless it anyway without looking at it because of what you said about the Cowboys. But you know what? I still have to drill down. I can't be that glib. Maybe one day when I'm for NBC Sports. Okay, so Ford is going to have a major earnings breakout. Why? Because of the hybrids they have. And I've got one of them, so is my daughter. Okay, so Pfizer, we got a pharma company, not good earnings, but that's all right. Wells is reports next Friday. The Disney company, well, we just saw what happened. We're going to stick with it as a member of the club. And SLB, they stopped calling it Schlumberger. Don't ask me why. I always liked Schlumberger, but now it's SLB. So we got oil, we got auto, we got drug, we got bank, and we got entertainment. And I'd say that hail to the Chiefs is what I say. Hail to the Chiefs. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go to my home state now. Let's go to Debbie in Pennsylvania. Debbie.
Hi, Jim. My husband and I have enjoyed watching you for years from our small town just outside of Hershey, PA.
Oh, my. I love that. Hey, you know, my wife's on the board of Bucknell, not that far from you.
Oh.
What's going on? Yeah.
That is pretty close.
Long time now.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to work.
Okay, so I own Apple, Amgen, Disney, PNC, and, of course, Hershey. Jim, am I diversified?
You like the local there. I like that. I like people who support local, vote local. Okay, so we got a nice chocolate company. I think cocoa price is about to come down. That's going to really – we had that off the charts this week. That's going to cause their margins to soar. Apple, we own it. We don't trade it. PNC is going to have a very good quarter. Last quarter wasn't a good stock bounce, right back immediately. Disney, we covered that. Yes, that's the one the Pelts lost. And yes, Bob Iger won, but I think everybody could win because the stock's up the most of any Dow stock so far. And then Amgen, a little let down on some of the drugs, but you know what? We think Bradway's doing a good job. So we have a drug company, we got an entertainment, we got a food company, we got a tech, we have a bank, and we have entertainment. Debbie's totally diversified. I mean, like completely and utterly, like max diversified. All right, let's go to Zachary in New York, please. Zachary.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Zach. How about you? I suffered through an earthquake today, and I came out the other side.
Me too. Yeah, I'm great. I'm ready for some college basketball this weekend.
Well, that's we are shaking too. Okay, let's go to work.
Yep. So my top holdings, mostly due to their strong performance over the past couple of years, are NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, Uber, and Pepsi. Am I diversified?
Oh, let me go to work on that. Okay. Now, first of all, you need to know, yesterday at this mezcal thing I did for my wife, I had my NVIDIA hat on, and she said, take that hat off. All that stock does is go down. So this is the kind of the world we're in. We had this. I'm not kidding. Said, take that hat off. You're a loser stock because it went down for like 10 days. NVIDIA, the finest tech company of the year. Microsoft wishes it could say that. Apple used to be able to say that. PepsiCo's obviously beverage, but also Frito-Lays. Don't forget that. And Uber, well, what do we know? I was in an Uber last night. It was just okay. So we've got transportation. We've got beverage. Oh, my. We've got three of the same. I have to do some work. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get rid of Microsoft. Microsoft's really great, I have to admit, and we own it for the club. And we're going to sub out with Lilly. Why? Because even though Lilly's moved dramatically, the GOP dash ones they have not spoken for yet nearly enough. And then, I don't know, look, I'm going to violate all my rules because I have the two stocks that I believe you should be owned and not traded. I can't go against it. It's trumping my diversification. It's the only two stocks that trump my diversification. There's nothing I can do. Oh, do we have another contestant? Sure enough. Wouldn't you know, we have Betsy from California. Betsy.
Hey, Jim. My four stocks are Ford, General Electric, Meta, Toll, and Valero. Am I diversified, Jim?
Oh, Valero. Okay. This is like one unbelievable portfolio. I mean, Betsy comes to play. This is a better portfolio than anyone who is... Maybe best of year. Listen to me. Hear me out, okay? Ford, well, we know this earnings breakout coming because of the hybrids. Meta, the stock was like up $730 today. I mean, the thing is crazy. GE, I've been actually looking at all the GE together, and it's now back almost to where it was before it had its apocalypse. Good job there by Larry Culp. Valero is the best performing refiner, and the refiners are the best performers in this market. And then Toll Brothers is the best performing home builder, even though rates are up. Home builder, refiner, aerospace, Zuckerberg, and auto. Wow. Unbelievable. These were all really great. I think I'm going to go this weekend and look at the club holdings, throw them away, ask Betsy what to do, and maybe I'm going to be back after the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast fire lightning round is next.
Special March Madness edition of the Lightning Round. We're going to be taking calls from students from the schools in the Final Four, rapid fire. Young people love the show. You say the name is stuck. I tell you about myself. So it's a good little call. So I said, my staff is ready. You play this out. And then the Lightning Round is over. Are you ready? Ski Dang. I'm the Lightning Round. I'm going to start with Danush from the University of Connecticut. Danush.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on. And go Huskies.
Go.
So I saw that Uber recently partnered with Waymo use autonomous vehicles for food delivery. What are your thoughts on this initiative and Uber's outlook over the next 5 years?
Oh, I like Uber regards to the Waymo. That doesn't interest me. I think Uber's really well run, and I think the stock is a buy. Let's go to Will from NC State. Will!
What's going on, Timothy?
I don't know. We're getting ready for the big games. I hope you are, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, I got a question about Citigroup.
Actually, I feel better about Citi than I have in a long time, but that doesn't mean I'm not in favor of Wells Fargo. That's right. I think Charlie Sharp has a strike. I think the stock's going to take out its old high from 2018. Let's go to Brooke from the University of Alabama. Brooke!
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm good, Brooke. How about you for checking in? What's happening? Alabama, I remember them in the Final Four. That's a new thing for me, Bama. What's going on?
Oh, just great. Love to see it. Would love to get your thoughts on ResMed. We have them
Roll in our ResMed. I think the stock's been knocked down because of the GOP-1s, and they got very good management. I'm okay with the stock. I'm right with ResMed. Let's go to Jacob O from the University of Connecticut. Jacob!
Hey, Jim, is Tesla undervalued, and should I buy with its volatility?
Which one would that be?
Tesla.
Tesla? No, we don't. Tesla's got, it's in some sort of like a grip of, here's this one. He's got to change address. Let's go to Sawyer, Jacob, University of Connecticut. Jacob, we thought we had Jacob, it was wrong. Jacob, get in the paint, come on.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on the show, Jim. Big fan of the show.
Oh, I'm glad you like the show.
I got two things for you. First off, let's go Huskies this weekend. We got a big weekend ahead of us.
I'm taking the Huskies.
And the second thing is, I'd love to hear your thoughts on SMCI's performance over the past couple months and your outlook.
SMCI is complicated because, you know, I am an NVIDIA guy. Hold it, don't trade it. I am not going to go with the SMCI because that's the not as good NVIDIA. I like the NVIDIA, although it was difficult to tell that my wife told me to take the hat off because all that stock does is go down. That was painful comments. I know you need to go to Ian L. From the Crimson Tide. Ian, University of Alabama. Ian.
Hey, Jim. How are you doing?
I am good, Ian. What's happening?
Oh, I'm living the dream. I got a question for you on Corsair. Seems like there's a
Corsair.
There
yeah. Corsair. This is why you're a first-timer and did a Final Four, because you come to me with Corsair. I thought you would give me, like, I mean, like, if it was Bama football, you would have come to me with NVIDIA. I have to say ixnay on that one, then. Let's go to Owen, North NC State. Owen.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I'm good, Owen. How about you?
Great. Thank you for taking the call. I had a question today about BlackBerry. There's been some buzz. They have a new leadership coming in, some cybersecurity technology that people like. Do you think it's a good growth pick?
No, not at all. I was thinking I happened to have a BlackBerry for lunch, and that didn't taste that good either. I need to go. I need to go to Grant, University of Alabama. Grant.
Hey, Jim. Hey, first off, roll tide.
I'm with you on that.
We've been working with alternative asset managers lately, and we really like Brookfield. Curious to hear your thoughts about the stock.
Brookfield? Hey, good. Fine, we got one. I got, you know, Sweet Home Alabama. I'm with you on that one. The stock's moved up a little bit, but I'm okay with that. I'm getting right with you on that. I'm going to Aria in University of Connecticut. Aria.
Hey, Jim. Appreciate you having me on the show, and Joe Huskies. My question is on Academy Sports and Outdoors. What is your current outlook on the stock, given that the company missed earnings recently, but overall has strong growth potential as the store expansion strategy takes effect?
It's cheap. I don't know. I mean, it's just not compelling to me. I mean, boy, I want something I can really just say is great, 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 and bye, bye, bye. But that's not one of them. I'm sorry. Let's go to Wesley at NC State University. Wesley.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm pretty good.
All right, that's good. I'm okay. How about you?
Doing pretty good. All right, so my question. What are your thoughts on the stock ALB?
How you doing? That's what I have to say about that one. Is it good? Tough. We're tough critics today, huh? The tourney. The tourney. Yeah, we got to get another tourney. Maybe we got like five more tourneys. Let's go to Ivani from Brown's in the tourney now. Okay. Ivani from Brown University. Boy, what is this? Oh, yeah, what is this, like the squash tourney?
Nah.
Okay.
I really enjoy watching your show, and I'm also a club member. I was wondering what your thoughts were on Amazon and the announcement of eliminating their checkout list shopping technology.
I like Amazon, and I like Brown. I wish my daughter liked it more when she was up there. She did the thumbs down. Hey, by the way, I turned down Stanford. It was my backup school. Take that out, Wes. All right, let's continue this farce. Let's go to Trevor, University of Connecticut. Trevor.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to ask, with the divestiture of Grail, what do you think about Illumina?
No, Illumina's no good. You want Danaher, same business, better company. Actually, this was the best lightning round in a long time. I want to thank all the students participating, except for the ones that had those really bad stocks. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the lightning round.
The lightning round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, Lost and Foundry? Cramer explains why Intel is on the outside looking in. Next.
It's not often that an analyst will simply eviscerate a CEO. Just take them apart. Usually when they want to criticize management, they put it diplomatically. For the same reason the sports reporters will hold off on trashing a coach. They don't want to lose access to the locker room. But this morning, Stacey Raskin, he's the top semiconductor analyst at Bernstein Research, published a scathing indictment of Intel's Pat Gelsinger and the stock of the storied chip company. The takeaway? Quote, no real reason to be here until 2030, end quote. Those are his words, not mine. It's been tough for me to watch Intel's steady decline. When I broke into this business, they were developing very exciting chips that became the backbone of the PC. We all know they had some real firepower at the top back then. Robert Noyce, Gordon Moore of Moore's Law fame, and the toughest CEO I ever met, Andy Grove, who wrote my favorite business book of all time, Only the Paranoid Survive. They and subsequent CEO Craig Barrett understood that Intel would crush everyone and own the market for microprocessors. The only other company that survived as a competitor was AMD, but it wasn't much of a rivalry. We used to joke that Intel had to keep AMD alive because otherwise they get hit with an antitrust investigation for monopolistic practices. What people didn't know is that the old Intel had a secret weapon, and his name was Jerry Parker. It was Parker's job to build semiconductor foundries at good prices and high yields. Parker, who worked at Intel from 1969 until his retirement in 2001, was like a machine. Each plan Intel put up was just like all the others, so engineers would immediately know what to do at any given plant because they were all familiar with it. The plants came in on budget and on time, technological marvels all. But then a series of Intel executives came and went. By the time they were done, Intel was a shadow of its former self, one that had outsourced a lot of its actual manufacturing to Taiwan Savvy. Now our country, through the good work of Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, is trying to reassert itself as a major player in semiconductor production, in part because we've got to diversify away from Taiwan, if only because it would be so easy for the Chinese government to cut that supply chain off. Intel's playing a key role in this process. That's terrific. But it's not clear to me that Intel's going to do it all that well. In fact, this week, Intel spelled out its foundry business will be a big money loser for years to come. I was surprised to see that statement about the difficulties of semiconductor manufacturing. Why? Because Pat Gelsinger, the CEO, made a very promotional appearance on our network just 2 weeks ago about a giant Arizona fab in Intel that it was building. Then on Wednesday, he reveals that the division he was promoting had racked up operating losses of nearly $7 billion in 2023.
The House of Pain.
Now along comes Stacey Rascon at Bernstein, and he decides to tell it like it is. First, he says the goalposts keep moving. Intel's key rosy margin goals were booted from 2026 to 2030, hence the title of the piece, Intel, See You in 2030. Then he lowers the boom on the Gelsinger era with this incredible zinger. I'm going to quote this whole thing. Why do they do this to themselves? He goes on. Intel's story over the last several years has been one of dashed expectations from outlandishly bullish targets to key product delays to rampant channel stuffing leading to eventual abject collapse. Holy cow! That's an incredible litany. Rascon somewhat facetiously says that it took 10 years to get Intel into its current debased position, so how could it take any less time to fix it? I've been very critical of Intel during this period, and that's why I've endlessly told you to buy NVIDIA or AMD instead. But judging by the foundry fiasco, apparently I've been a relative sweetheart versus this truth teller. Thank you, Stacey Rascon. At least investors now know why they've lost so much money in Intel during what I can only describe as a very peculiar era. I like to say there's always a market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you Monday. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available. Tremfya.